So let's do the 29th verse. The meter is also changed. Bhagavan has changed the meter, suggesting it is a very important verse. Ascharyavat pasyati kaschidenam. Ascharyavat vadati tathaiva chanyah. Ascharyavat chainamanya shrunoti. Shrutvapenam vedana chaiva kaschit. So ascharya. Ascharya means wonder. We'll talk about wonder when we explain it. So it is a wonder. Ascharyavat pasyati kaschit enam. Few people kaschit enam. Enam means this knowledge. What we have talked about in the verse number 11 to 28, which is the highest knowledge of the Upanishads. Bhagavan is starting the Bhagavad Gita with that. So enam, this knowledge. Ascharyavat pasyati kaschit. Kaschit means a few people or a rare person. One or rare person pasyati sees or knows this knowledge. And that is an ascharya. That is a wonder that even few people know this knowledge. Ascharyavat vadati tathaiva chanyah. So anya, and it is an ascharya, it is a wonder that somebody vadati tatha, and somebody even speaks about this knowledge, that is also a wonder. Then he says, ascharyavat cha enam anya shrunoti. Shrunoti means listen. So enam, this knowledge, even a few people listen, that is an ascharya, that even people are coming to listen to this knowledge. And then the biggest ascharya, Bhagavan says, is shrutva api, even having listened, enam, veda, na chaiva kaschit. Na, the veda means do not know this, even somebody, even a few people do not, nobody knows this knowledge. So to summarize, it is a wonder that people come to know this knowledge. In fact, in the Gita, Sri Krishna says in one place, out of thousands of people who are living in this world, maybe one will come to seek this knowledge. Like now we have 10,000, more than 10,000 Indians living in Bakersfield. Now when Swamiji comes, how many people show up to the lecture? 30 or 40. So it is a wonder, out of 10,000 people, only 30 or 40 come to this lectures. Or even here, there's about 25, 30 people. So it is out of thousands of people, Krishna says, one person wants to get this knowledge. Out of thousands who want to get this knowledge, only one person gets it. It's not to be discouraged. It's not that. The point is that we are the rare few who have come to try and get this knowledge. And so once you come, you will get it, but it needs patience, it needs persistence. So he says, so out of the millions of this universe, there are very few who actually get this knowledge, and those are the realized masters. Pasyati here does not mean see, but one who knows it. So they are the Jesus and the Buddha and the Shankaracharya and Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda and Tukaram and Mirabai and all those great saints and, you know, our teachers who have got this knowledge, Saint Francis. All these great saints and prophets who have this knowledge, they are very rare. It is ascharya, but it is a surprise that this knowledge, even a few people get it. But then what happens? Gurudev says that after they get it, so these are the ones that I have spoken about, are those who have come out and spoken. They've come out and talked to their devotees. Buddha talked and Jesus talked and Shankaracharya traveled all over the country. Gurudev traveled all over the world. Tukaram, Narsimha Mehta, Sant Gyaneshwar, the South Indian, you know, devotional saints. All of them were the ones who spoke, who vadati. But there are so many others who, once they realize the truth, they just go into silence and they just go into meditation. and they stay in the Himalayas or in the forest or by the river, and they don't speak to anybody. They just meditate. You might say, oh, they are wasting their time having this knowledge. They are not teaching us. No. But their presence on this earth is such a blessing. For a realized master to live on this earth, he's blessing the whole universe. In fact, there's one place it says the rain falls for such people. Rain doesn't fall for you and me. It falls for such masters who are sitting somewhere and meditating. They are the rain is falling to bless them. So we have to be grateful to these prophets and masters because of whom we have all what is, you know, what is happening. So there are very few who actually go out and speak. Majority of them go into silence because this truth cannot be expressed in words. It is extremely difficult. So then why are you talking about it? You know, people might say. So we'll talk about that. Why are we? We still have, why does Bhagavan then write it? If you say it cannot be expressed in words, why is it written in the book? Why is he telling Arjuna when it's not supposed to be spoken? So we'll talk about that. So it is said very rare people speak about it. Majority of them go into silence and just go into the meditation, become one with God. And out of that Ascharya, what it is strange that even a few people come to listen. And somebody asked Swami Tejomayanandaji, he says, when you speak, only 250 or 300 people are there. But when there is a rock star, there's 50,000 people. You know, or some, if you see this, some, you know, some singer comes from India, Asha Bhosle or whoever are the, you know, the new ones, Kumar Sanu and all those. The place is full. The LA, you know, Coliseum or stadium, 50,000 tickets. They sell $500, $1,000 tickets, and it's sold out. Or if any, some great rock star, Western. So what Swamiji said, Guruji said, why only 250 people come to your lecture when somebody, singer is singing, there's 50,000. He says, I'm surprised even 250 come. Because this knowledge is not very easy. And even if they come, they run away. Some of them, they show up, they run away. It's not for me. He says, it is wonder, Krishna says, that even a few people are coming to listen. But the greater wonder is, Shrutva api, having listened, they still don't get it. Having come to the teacher and listened, they still say, it's not for me. I don't think it is practical. I don't think it's going to work. So there are very few people who know it. Out of them, very few people speak it. The people who come to listen are very few. And the ones who get it are few. But the ones who don't get it are the majority. Even having listened, they don't get it. So we'll spend some time talking about it. So he used the word Ascharya, which is wonder. And Ascharya in Sanskrit is A-A iti Acharyati. A-A means ah. Like when you see something wonderful, like when the first time you saw Grand Canyon. Ah, you know, the wonder, how grand, how huge it is, how beautiful. I remember when we first went to Alaska about 2004, we were on the cruise and then we took a seaplane from one of the ports and it took us over the North Pole. Oh my God, you know, you literally say, ah, because you go there and miles and miles and miles, there is ice, 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 ice. There is nothing but white. It's so pretty and so unspoiled. It's just like you there and you see nothing but snow. Wow, what a wonder. And the greater wonder was, I clearly remember when we were on the seaplane and the pilot took us low in the middle of the ice where there's like for hundreds of miles there is ice. There is a deer jumping around. I said, where did he come from? He's happy. He's jumping in the middle of the snow. There is nothing, no vegetation. Who is taking care of this deer? Who is making sure the deer gets food and gets water and nutrition? There has to be. Otherwise, how can this deer? I saw that very clearly. I said, Bhagwan, look how your glory is. You're even taking care of this guy who for 50, 60, 100 miles, there is only ice everywhere. So that is wonder. You know, when you see the wonders of nature, or when you see the glaciers, or when you see the beautiful sunrise or sunset or all these things, or the meteor showers. I remember we went to see the meteor showers in Lebec and Fraser Park. I don't know how many of you went. It's about 15, 20 years ago. But a meteor actually hit the earth and you could see the lights coming down like that. And it went on for an hour or two. The light would come from the top and come and disappear. Light would come. What wonder it is. It's amazing. So that is Ashcharyavat. That is wonder to see how this world is. So Bhagavan says that the one who sees is very rare. As I said, out of millions, there may be one prophet, one Mahatma. And then very few of them speak. And then, as I said, when they start to speak, there are very few who listen. Very few. And in fact, not only they don't listen, but a lot of times they kill the prophet. Jesus was killed. Tukaram was tortured. Sant Gyaneshwar, his life was hell. If you read his life, how much he suffered. Mirabai. So not only we don't respect or listen to these saints, we try to destroy them. Why? Because they speak outside the box. See, we have this world, you know. World is like that. It should be like that. I should go work, earn, and enjoy my life. And then this guy comes and says, what you're doing is wrong. You know, this is the right path. We say, who is this fellow to tell us? Let's kill him. So either we kill him or torture him or ignore him or put him aside and say, he's a madman. You know, Tukaram, they used to call him mad. They used to say he's a crazy fellow. He just sit and all the time singing about God, and it must be a nutcase. So we usually either we kill them or we marginalize them, that they are not worth listening. Majority of prophets had a lot of hardship. Even Buddha, even Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda faced so much opposition from the pandits when he first started teaching this knowledge. They said, this knowledge is supposed to be taught in Sanskrit. And who are you to teach it in English? You are debasing our knowledge, and you are, you know, it's supposed to be preserved only of a few. And you are giving it to everybody, freely speaking to thousands of people, and they will not respect it. The book will be thrown here and there. And no, he had faced so much opposition. So, and out of those who appear, very few get it. Very few really understand what the master is telling. And why is it so difficult? Because it's the subject, it's not an object. See, for us, if I see a flower, okay, I know it's a flower. I see a glass, I know. I hear a sound, I can understand. It is a bird chirping, or it is a crow, or if I hear music, whether it's classical or whether it's rock, you know, if I have the ear for it. But this is not something that you can see with your eyes, not something your mind can feel, not something your intellect can even think about. So it's not something I can see or hear, not something I can think about, not something I can feel. It is the subject because of which I'm able to see, because of which I'm able to feel, because of which I'm able to think. So it is not the object, it is the subject. So it is within. So this knowledge, because most of us are used to looking outside, that's why in the Upanishad it says, Paranchi khani vyatrinat swayambhu, tasmat paran pasyatina antaratmana. Swayambhu, the Lord, the Creator, made our senses to look out. The eyes, ears, nose, skin, tongue, and the mind to look outside, the intellect to look outside. Everything is to look outside. Tasmat paran pasyati na antaratmana. That's why we are all the time looking for it outside. Say, pehle aap pehchano, you know yourself. That is the way to know God. So it says it is not an object. So how do I acquire it? We have talked before, Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana. So Shravana is listening. Manana is contemplating. Listening means not only listening, but even reading also comes in Shravana. Manana, then you go home and contemplate. And then Nididhyasana, Dhyasana, we can't meditate upon it. Abide in it, bring it into your life. So that is the process. First you listen, then you think about it, and then you apply it. And our mind is not interested in Atma. It is interested in Anatma. If you ask a person, what is your interest? What have you done? He'll say, I'm an MBA. I have a successful business. I have so much money. I have a wife. I have a child. I have a house. I have two dogs. I have a summer cottage, and I have a winter cottage. And so all his interest is outward, and not that there is anything wrong with that. But that is all we are capable of thinking, anatma. This is all anatma. the objects, emotions, thoughts, the perceiver, feeler, thinker, body, mind, intellect, is all outside. It is all the Atma, the Anatma. The true Atma is the Om or consciousness. Or if we listen, we say, you know, people who come here say, you know, my husband, he should come. He needs to come listen to this knowledge. Yeah. Or true, right? or when Swamiji comes, they'll say, Swamiji is here, you know. Or they will tell their children, you need to go to Bal Vihar. You need to study. Where am I going? I'm going shopping. You know, I have to go to Valley Plaza, buy this. I have to buy this or that. The children we send, okay, you must go to Bal Vihar. You must attend. You cannot miss. But where am I? I'm on the golf course. If you ask people, why don't you come to the Sunday class? Sunday is my day for golf. Don't ask me to do anything else. So we always think this knowledge is for our children or for somebody else. I don't need it. Somebody else should do it. Or if you ask somebody to come to the lecture, he'll say, I am still young. You know, I'm only 35. When I become 65, then I'll come. Oh, by then, you know, you first of all, do you know whether you will live to be 65? Secondly, as we get older, our mental faculties get over. Our body gets weaker. You can't sit for long. You can't understand. Not that if I'm old, I cannot start. But the point is, the earlier you start, the better. Or people will say, I am okay. I don't need it. And if somebody starts going to these classes, the gossip starts. You know, she must be having problems with her husband. That's why she's going to the classes. You know, people will start talking. Or if they invite you for a party and you say, I can't go. The party is too late, or I have to get up early in the morning and meditate. Something is wrong with this person. She doesn't want to go to a party for meditation. And after some time, they'll stop inviting you, which is very good. They don't invite you to parties is even better, because then you have no pressure to go. But people think that something is wrong. If somebody is coming to these lectures, something is wrong with this person. So that's why very few people attend, because the majority for them, it's the world is the place. Enjoy, khao, piyo, maja karo, have a good time. And more wonder is the students. We just went to Bombay. We went to Sandipani, where the students are learning. Those who are going to become acharyas, later on become brahmacharis and then become swamis and become teachers. Now, there were 80 young boys and girls. All are college educated. They have to have a college degree, and they have a very rigorous selection process before they are selected. Now, these 80 people have given up their family, given up their jobs, like Swami Ishwarananda, who comes here. He was a computer programmer in those days, computer engineer, when there were very few, and he could have been a top executive in any company, you know, in a few years. He gave up all that. He could have been a multimillionaire, and he gave it up. And for what? For an uncertain future. Where he's a Swami, but he has no money, he has no house, he has no possessions, he has no family. He owns nothing. All he owns is whatever he owns is given to him by the mission. And so these 80 students who are studying, and people ask them, so why are you studying? So to know who I am, they'll say. So to know who you are, you need to give up your family and come here for 2 years. I'm telling you who you are. They tell him his name, you are, you know, Satish, and you are a boy, and you are a... That's not so. People cannot imagine how anybody can give up their home and family and children, not children, but home and family and mother and father, and go and study for 2 years and then take sannyas and become, you know, brahmacharis and become swamis. People think this person's life is ruined, and always parents, but you know, they didn't probably teach him properly. So it is a wonder that there are students who are ready to give up everything and to teach us. See, all these acharyas, whether it is Swami Tejomayananda or Ishwarananda or Swami Bodhatmananda ji or Vimal ji, they all studied for so many years, and now they are teaching us. That's why you and I are able to study this knowledge. It is because of these great students of Gurudev. Of course, Gurudev himself was a journalist. He gave that up. I'll tell you the story about Gurudev. So people think that what I see is real and what I don't see is unreal. Like if you ask somebody, have you seen it? He says, yeah, seeing is believing. If I see it, if I can touch it, if I can taste it, it is real. If I can't see, hear, smell, taste, touch, it is unreal. So we think of what I don't see as unreal and what I see as real. But the Upanishad tell us that this world is unreal. It is just a temporary projection. It's like a play, like a cinema. The real is the what you cannot see. The Atma, the consciousness, the Brahman, which is all pervading. That is real. And this world is a temporary appearance upon that. Just as a pot is a temporary appearance upon clay. Soon as the pot breaks, so it is a temporary. So this world is temporary. So what is real is that. And what is unreal is what we are seeing. Unreal does not mean that I don't see the table or I don't, but it is a temporary appearance. It is like a play, like a movie, like a natak. Do not give too much reality. The real is the what you are not able to see, the unmanifest. And Gurudev's story, a lot of you have watched that movie, Quest, On a Quest. But just to kind of summarize, so Gurudev was a journalist, Swami Chinmayanandaji, and he left. Actually, he didn't leave. His editor sent him. So he said, I'm going to write an article about these Swamis, these so-called monks who are sitting in the Himalayas and they're cheating all of us. They're sitting there doing nothing, wasting their time. I'm going to write an article to expose them. In fact, he didn't even believe in God. That's how he was an atheist. Even though he grew up in a very religious family, his family was Shiva Bhaktas. They did hours of puja, but he was an atheist. So he said, I'm going to expose all these Swamis. So he goes there and he meets Swami Shivananda, who was the acharya of in that area. That later on he founded the Divine Life Society. So Swami Shivananda. So he goes to him and says, Swamiji, I'm a journalist. My name, what was his name? Balakrishna Menon. His name was, sorry, thank you. His name was Balakrishna Menon. And he said, my name is Balakrishna Menon. I'm here to write an article about your ashram and the Swamis here. Shivananda says, sure. He didn't tell him that I'm here to expose you guys and you are cheating the people and all. He just said, I want to know. Swami Shivananda says, sure, you can write, but on one condition. He says, what? He says, you have to attend every activity that is happening. Don't just sit in your room and write, I know it. Every activity. He says, yep. He says, yes. 4 o'clock in the morning, you have to get up because you have to take a bath in the river, cold river. And 5 o'clock, I want you here for meditation. So the bell rings at 4. You have to wake up at 4. Come and meditate. And then we have the classes. Attend all the classes and see everything. And so he did. He said, yes, I'll do it. So he would get up in the morning, take a bath in the cold river, icy. Then attend the meditation class, attend all the lectures. And then in the afternoon, Swami Shivananda was also a physician. Even though he was a Swami, he was a monk, he was actually a physician with, you know, proper MD degree, MBBS. So he saw him in the afternoon working hard and taking care of patients and seeing so many patients all afternoon. He said, this teacher has got up at 4 o'clock in the morning. He taught us meditation. He delivered lectures. He writes letters to all the people. All day he's busy. And in the afternoon, instead of resting, he's spending 3 hours seeing patients. And then in the evening, again, he's giving lectures. He said, I thought these monks were useless. He is doing so much more work than I was. He felt so ashamed about himself that how could he even think that? And he was so inspired by Swami Shivananda. He actually used to wake up before all the other students. He would sleep the last. Balakrishna Menon later on became Swami Chinmayananda. He started reading the material. And the more he read, the more he got fascinated. Wow, this knowledge is, I didn't even know that. And his editor kept saying, when are you going to send the articles? He said, it's not done yet. It's not done yet. Because the whole article changed. What he had come to write, he could no longer write that. Because he says, this is not what I was thinking. He gets so shocked and he gets so ashamed of his own thinking that he then goes to Swami Shivananda and says, I want to become a monk. I want to become one of you. And then Swami Shivananda gave him the name Swami Chinmayananda and you know, gave him the diksha, you know, made him a monk. And then, of course, he went to Swami Tapovan Maharaj for more learning. So the point is that there are very few people who understand this. And most people are very skeptical. Like Gurudev was very skeptical. These sadhus, they're all crooks. You know, we also have this idea. Of course, in every profession, there are some who are good and some who are not. But the majority of the people who go on this path are good people, ones who have given up their family and their home, like even priests. You know, majority of priests are very good. But there are one or two who come out who do some bad things, and then the media advertises, oh, this priest did this. And so we label all priests are bad or all monks are bad. No, the majority of them are good, like doctors. Majority of them are good, but there is one or two bad apples who do something bad, and that's the one that comes in the media. So that's what they say, that the majority of the people are not interested in it. Those who really are interested are very few. And then people say, but why don't you want to get this knowledge? He says, I don't think I'm interested. I'm more interested in the world. But the teacher says, I'm talking about you. Don't you want to know about yourself? He said, I already know myself. I can see. No, he says, I'm talking about the real you. But most of us are not interested because our desire is just for the world. And the Upanishads and the Gita and all talk in puzzles. They talk in puzzles. And I'll explain why. Like Upanishad will say, na tatra vaak gacchati, na mana, na vacha, na vaak, na mana, na, you know, it cannot be seen, na chakshu gacchati, na chakshu gacchati, na vaak, na mana. So the eyes cannot see it, speech cannot describe it, mind cannot think it. So, well, if the eyes cannot see, speech cannot describe, mind cannot, then it's, something cannot be known. So if you think that, or Bhagavan Krishna in Gita will say, they are in me, I am not in them. You know, we talked about that in the other. So what do you mean by that? In fact, afterwards, Krishna says, actually, they are not in me at all. They say, Bhagavan, please make up your mind. Are you in it or you are not? Or are they in you? What kind of riddle are you talking about? Or Upanishad will say, it is farther than the farthest, it is nearer than the nearest. It is bigger than the biggest, it is smaller than the smallest. It moves and it does not move. It is inside and outside. I say, come on, make up your mind. Does it move or does it not move? Is it big or is it small? Is it far or is it near? So Upanishads make these kind of comments, and so we get confused. We think these are rishis, you know, sitting in the low oxygen. Probably they got, you know, Alzheimer's or something, because sitting up there, they are confused. They should talk some sense. You know, it moves and does not move. Make up your mind. You know, we are used to one thing. But purposely they use such phrases to make us think. What is it that moves and same time does not move? Like the Atman, the consciousness, Brahman is everywhere. So there is no place for it to move. But it appears to move in us. As we are walking, talking, it is the same Brahman that's moving. It is moving in the earth. The earth is moving around the sun, and the moon is moving around the earth. So it appears to move through these objects. But so what I'm saying is these phrases are purposely put by these rishis to make us think. What is he saying? And then they will say, na ayam atma pravachanena labhya. Through discourses, it cannot be known. Cannot be known through discourse? No. She said, then why are you talking? You know, somebody might ask me, or why was Bhagavan Krishna talking to Arjuna when it cannot be known by discourse? So what they mean is that it cannot be spoken about or cannot be, because no words can describe this knowledge. In fact, all the rishis, all the mahatmas, all the saints of any faith, when you ask them, what have you experienced? Say, I cannot describe it. In fact, Swami Prananji, you know, the Pranami faith where I grew up in, he says, what I have seen, I cannot describe what I have experienced. But I am, and then he says, I cannot describe, but then he writes 18,000 verses about it. He says, if you cannot describe it, why are you writing? Our book is 18,000 verses. This Gita is 700 verses. So why have you written? He says, because I cannot stop. What I have seen is so wondrous, such a wonder, Ascharyavat. I want all of you to also experience what I have experienced. So I'm giving you this knowledge. So using this knowledge, you can reach that. So So the reason they are speaking out of compassion for us, they don't need to speak. Swami Chinmayananda didn't need to travel all over the world, even with a bad heart. When his left ventricular ejection fraction was 15% or even less, he was still giving discourses. An average person would have just stayed in bed. 15% heart, I can't go anywhere. He would just stay. Even with a wheelchair, I have seen him being taken with a, he couldn't walk, he couldn't breathe, he had oxygen on. And then he would speak for an hour and a half. They would take off his oxygen. He said, I don't want any. He would sit on the stage, speak for an hour and a half, and then they closed the curtain and he collapsed. I've seen him myself, and they had to put the oxygen back on. Even with such poor heart, he was still doing it out of compassion for all of us, that the people of the world need to know. So that's the essence of this verse. And how can we miss it? Because it is you. That's what rishis are surprised. How is it that you don't get it? Shrutva api ena vedana chaiva kaschit. Why don't you get it? I'm talking about you. Don't you want to know about yourself? And you say, I don't get it. It is strange. It is a wonder. It is ascharya. And last, I'll quote Jesus. It's a beautiful parable that he has given, which is exactly the same thing, which shows that the knowledge is all from the same source. So it's in the Mark. I forget the verse number, but it's the Mark. That's the area in the Testament. And it is said that Jesus was talking about a sower. What is a sower? Sower is like one who sows seeds, like a farmer. So he says there was a farmer who was walking to plant the seeds in his field. But the cloth bag and he was carrying had some small holes in it. So some of the seeds fell on the roadside as he was walking. And the birds came and ate it. Okay. And then as he was going further, he was passing over some hard ground. And some seeds fell on hard ground and rock. And there the seeds grew for a short while, but then they had no base because it was hard. They couldn't penetrate. And so the hot sun came and they perished. So some seeds were eaten by the birds, some seeds on hard ground didn't grow. As the farmer was going further, some seeds fell in thorns, in thorny bushes. They tried to grow, but the thorns and the weeds overtook them, so they couldn't grow. But then there were few seeds that were left that he planted in his field. And out of them, maybe 40 or 60 or 100, 100 plants came out. So this parable is so symbolic that when the teacher teaches this knowledge, it falls on the ground. And what it means is we don't want it. It goes in one ear, out the other ear. And what we say, let others attend, let them learn from it. So like the birds, let the birds come and eat it, but we don't benefit, others benefit. So it goes in one ear, out the other ear, falls, and somebody else benefits. Then second of us, some of us are like this hard stone. They call them Arambhashuras. Arambhashuras means who are very brave in the beginning. So like in my meditation class, I teach on Thursday, one person came and told me, this is the best thing I was looking for. I am still looking for him. or there are others. This has happened to me. They will come to the class. I'm so enthusiastic. So soon as they leave from here, they will online, they will order a meditation pillow and a meditation mat and a meditation, incense and meditation music and Patanjali's book of yoga. They will order all that. How long? Week or two. Then their desire goes. Now they go for some other shopping. They have shopped for meditation. Now. So these are called Arambhashura. So they are like the one on hard ground. They try to grow, but their mind is not ready for it. So it stays for a while and then dies out. Then their interest goes to something else. Now they want to go to yoga. Then they want to go to Sri Sri Ravi Shankar, and then they want to go to some other philosophy, and then they just keep running and nothing stays in them. Not that there's anything wrong, but these people are never stay in one place, so the knowledge can never get firm ground. It's hard ground. Then there are the third people who are the thorns. What is the thorns? They get this knowledge, But their mind is so filled up with materialism, shopping and buying and possessing and eating and drinking and enjoying. And so all these thorns surround this knowledge, and the knowledge cannot grow because they do not have any space in their mind for this knowledge. It is filled with, again, not, I'm not criticizing, but that is all their purpose, just growing thorns and weeds. When will the flowers grow? If you have so many thorns and weeds in your mind, where is the space for flowers? So that is the third category that Jesus described. And the fourth one is the one who has soft ground. What is the meaning of soft ground? That his heart is ready for this knowledge. He approaches the teacher with devotion. When the teacher gives this knowledge, he's so blessed. He then goes home, thinks about it and understands it. Repeated listening is very important. One time listening is not enough. I have been myself going to Swamiji's and listening since 1990. So many times we have heard, you are that. And so repeated listening makes a firm groove. Just as our groove is of materialism, to make the groove of spirituality takes time. So you have to be patient. Patience is very important. Repeated listening, then go home, think about it. And then how can I apply Gita in my life? If Krishna says you are the soul and you are not the body, then body afflictions should not bother me. If something is wrong with the body, I take a medicine. If it's something I have to bear, I bear it without complaint. Same thing if some stress comes or some problem comes. Don't let it bother you that much. Take care of it, but understand it is not me. So this detachment that one has to get, without detachment, that's why we, when Swamiji's come, we always chant, na karmana na prajaya dhane na tyage naike amritatva manashuhu. He says, neither by action, neither by people, neither by wealth, you can get this knowledge, only by tyaga, by detachment. So slowly detach from your body, mind, intellect. Use them as my equipment, as my house, but I am not. So I am this consciousness, but I am a servant of the Lord. So have that clear understanding, and then you can function in the world, do whatever. It doesn't mean you don't enjoy or don't travel or don't have fun. We're not saying that you should sit home all day and meditate, contemplate. No, it's okay to enjoy, have fun, but that should not become my primary purpose in life. So that is the essence of this beautiful verse. And again, they say patience. Patience is necessary. It's a very, very beautiful verse. I spent a lot of time on it because I think it applies to very all of us. It's a very, very practical verse. So any questions, any comments? Yes.
Actually, I have two questions. A definition of a realized master. And then once they reach that, you know, and this is what means confusing. They go into seclusion. They don't talk to nobody. But what is it that, you know, is it that you said that they have they emanate something,
mm-hmm.
but to whom, if they don't see anybody, so what are they emanating?
Okay. First of all, realized master cannot be defined. So your first question, definition, there is no definition. Only one realized master knows another realized master. So you and I, we cannot know the realized master. The person walking on the street may be realized, a homeless person. We don't know. So only a realized master knows he's realized. And if he comes in contact with another master, they can tell each other. So, but in worldly language, just to make it simple, is one who has become one with God, with Om, and lives as the divinity. For that individual, God and I are not separate. The ego is completely dead. The perceiver, feeler, thinker is dead. His body, mind, and intellect are functioning, but there is no I. That alone is me. So that understanding, not only understanding, but complete abidance in that. That's why Jesus could say, he who had seen me had seen the Father. That means the Father in heaven and I are one. So that, they may say it or they may not say it, but they live with that understanding. Swami Chinmayananda never said, I am realized. Never. Not even once. And people asked him, are you realized? He would say, no. Because This is something you don't say. This is something you understand, you experience. So that is number one. The realized master is whose ego is dead and who has become one. And a person may speak, like I said, Swamiji or Jesus or Buddha spoke. But there are others who don't speak, but their presence on the earth generates such positive vibrations. So there is a vibrational energy. This body you are seeing is nourished by energy. It is energy. In fact, our body? Protons, neutrons, and electrons, right? Our body is considered consisting of molecules. Molecules are made of atoms. And what are atoms? Protons, neutrons, and electrons. So around protons, neutrons, and electrons are orbiting. And that is my whole body. So we are actually energy. We are not this body. And there is a cosmic energy which is supporting. That's why Vishnu is said to be the supporter and Lakshmi ji is at his feet. The two of them are emitting energy which is supporting this whole universe. So this whole universe is supported by that one cosmic energy. And you and I are that energy, but we think we are this matter. Like this table is not substantial. It is actually energy appearing as a table. You know that, right? All the scientists have proved that. So they generate so much positive energy that they bless the whole universe. Even people who are far away from them can be blessed. So that's why Raman Maharishi, he was a realized master in the 1940s and 50s. He hardly spoke. One or two or three books he composed. Most of the time he just sat in silence and thousands of people would walk by and just sitting in his presence, all their questions would be answered. They would just feel such peace. It's like they have been in the presence of God. They don't have to speak. Speech is a very poor means of expression. They can bless the world just by their presence. So that I hope that answers your question.
In their presence, but it also...
Even if they're not if they're sitting in the Himalayas, they're still blessing all of us. It travels for... See, again, the energy has no limits. Can you limit energy? No, the same energy that is in the Himalayas is here. It is one energy which is supplied by the Lord himself. So they are part of that energy. So you and I are connected. Even right now we are seeing, but suppose your son is somewhere, like for especially mothers, anything happens to their daughter, they come to know even before the daughter calls. She says, I knew something is wrong with you. How are they able to do that? It is the energy. It is the connection.
Actually, yeah. Studies are done on those.
Yes,
basically,
yes.
Right. Brainwaves
were... Through brainwaves. And actually people can, through their mind, move an object like this glass sitting. There are people who can actually, with their mind, move it. Or they can see what is happening on the other side of the wall. Somebody's there, they'll say, oh, this person is there. So there is a lot of the universe that you and I don't know, which is called extrasensory perception. So there is a lot more than what we can see.
Actually, the thoughts travel faster than the light.
Yes.
Because that other person would know what you're exactly thinking about other person,
right?
Or positive, so that's how
they react. Right. Like right now I can think about Uranus or Neptune or Sun, which is 93 million miles away, faster than light. I can think about the furthest star, which is trillions of miles away. So you're right. Thought travels.
They also say that a lot of people pray for somebody to get well.
Yes.
And he does get well.
Absolutely. Right. Prayer has a lot of power, yeah. Any other questions?
It's called aura sometimes.
Aura, yes. Yes, energy. You can,
yeah,
in fact, right. People who can read aura, they can read, is this a good person or a bad person, depending
like
on his aura.
Animals would see the aura.
Yes, yes.
Exactly.
Dog can say. And also when a person gets angry, his aura changes. When he's peaceful, when he's happy, the aura changes. And people can perceive that, people who are sensitive, yes. So energy is a very, very powerful field. It's a very different field, which is not, average people don't know that. And I have met people who actually are very much into energy and working with energy. So it's a very scientific field. It's not hocus pocus pocus.
It is
Reiki to some extent is that. Yes, Reiki is that. Yes. Right.
So this is how energy travels when you want to cure somebody, when you want to take care. Like if you are
exactly.
In India and your plants are here in the US in your house, you can provide Reiki to them and your plants will still grow.
Mm-hmm.
And be taken care of.
True.
In the same
true.
Way, it's applied to animals, to people, you are curing. So,
right. 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 You can send positive energy, Reiki. Yes, absolutely. I actually studied Reiki for a while also. I was even practicing it for a few months. So all those things help. Yeah, like when your child is somewhere not doing well, you can send positive energy. Yeah. So yeah.
But in that thing, there is a condition that the recipient must be aware that you are giving, sending Reiki to them at that particular time. And they should know and they should be eager to accept it.
Right.
If there is no acceptance from their side, how much ever Reiki you give, it won't reach them. So they should have faith in your Reiki. That is the
yeah. Now that may be, but what I've been told, it's not. Again, not to keep bringing mine, but my daughter was very sick and she was taking her law exam. And she had a, you know, bad infection.
In case of family,
yes. And I sent positive energy to her and she told me, Dad, I felt it. She told me, she didn't know that I was going to send positive, but in my mind I contemplated and I said, she just sat down for her, you know, the law exam. And I said, Lord, please. And she said, Dad, I felt, literally, she told me, I didn't tell her that. She said, Dad, I felt. So what I'm saying is,
for
family it can happen, maybe, yes.
A pregnant mother can send Reiki to the child.
Right, right.
So here there is no acceptance from the baby, but
yes.
The child can still receive it. So, yeah.
Yeah, so this, yeah, energy can be transmitted.
Uh-huh.
Energy definitely can be transmitted. I totally agree with you. But what I'm saying is even the person may not be aware of it. Even it may not be a family member. But if you send positive energy to somebody, it does affect. Because once you are in touch with that totality, you can send it far and wide.
Actually, it happened with my mom. I was suffering here, but I don't think it's pain. I took it as is. And
yes.
My mom was in India. She used to sit and cry like for hours. She didn't know the reason. And after a while, she told me, after a few months, I was crying. I didn't know the reason, but she knew later on what
right.
I was going through here. And then she said, oh my God, that's the
mm-hmm.
thing. But I never felt like because I didn't take it. I didn't take personal.
No, energy has a lot of power if you can. Again, I don't claim to be an expert or I haven't done much, but I whatever little I know, it has a lot of power. It is very, very important. And that is the basis of everything because we actually are energy. And if you can channel that inner energy, you can help yourself and help others. But it's not something that, you know, comes naturally to us. It's something you can learn. But as you study more, you become more in tune with your inner self. That's what it is.
So my father's guru, Shri Gurupandan Swami, he did one experiment with, because most of his followers did not have this trust that there is something called as an aura.
Yes.
And with that, he can even restrict people coming into that boundary and he can even bring the people into that boundary.
Right.
So he did an experiment practically with the people. And he selected a few of the persons who were following him. He went and sat onto a mountain and he said that, okay, now at this time, after this time, anybody of you or everyone of you can try to come out, but I assure you that you won't be able to come beyond this point. And literally everyone tried to reach over there to him, but nobody was able to. So at some point of time, after passing that particular distance, they would not even, so somehow they feel that they cannot go beyond and
okay.
they would stop there. There was one Patel from Baroda and he tried to cross that and he tried to go further. As soon as he took his first step, he went into trance and he sat down over there.
Okay.
And after about 2 hours, Guruji came down from the mountain and then he woke him up. That is when he woke up. So. There's an aura. If you have that aura, if you can build that level of aura, then yes, definitely the same thing. That you can send energy,
yes.
You can heal people, you can also control who comes into the proximity on earth.
Right.
So this he also said about this Guruji in South India who died with cancer. So his aura was so nice. But he said that when he went there, he thought that when he was, his aura was so nice and he healed a lot many people, how did he die of cancer? So the same thing happens that when a disciple gets into his aura, breaks into him and reaches up to him, his disease or any bad thing about him will get transferred to that guru, and then the guru would suffer, his disciple would come out of that.
But also, see, whoever is born has to go, and so nobody lives forever. Even Bhagavan Krishna himself didn't live forever. So whatever they perish of is an excuse, whether they die of cancer, whether they die of, you know, some illness, like Swami Vivekananda suffered a stomach ailment and he perished. So Swami Chinmayananda, his heart. So some excuse has to be there for a person to perish. Ramakrishna Paramahansa had throat cancer, terrible cancer. He couldn't even speak. He couldn't even swallow. So whatever an excuse is, because this body is meant to perish, so there has some reason has to be there. It cannot just suddenly drop. So Bhagavan chooses a reason, whatever our remaining karmas are, to exhaust, I think. Anything else?
I just want to add, point out something that you already have explained so beautifully, that your body, you, how you identify your body as a different from your soul. Like, then I just like to give an example. Like, there is a drowning man who is in the water, and he's like saying, "Save me, save me!" And then his shirt come out, and somebody goes, jumps in the water, and he gets his shirt, and he says, "Oh, I saved the cloth." So there's no use of saving the cloth; you have to save the body, right?
Right.
Then only that. So in the same way, our body is like a cloth, and the soul is like the soul is the actual body of the body.
The owner of the body.
Owner of the body.
Right.
So this is very important, how you take care of the soul, how you have to save your soul and not this body which will perish.
Right.
So,
but through body you do things, so body is equally important as soul. Because your soul is inside our body, so both are...
In the spiritual world, I'm talking about the spiritual world, how you should save your soul.
Yes.
To reach the ultimate goal. So, in the same way, as you said, that detachment from the outer world.
Right.
Chaitanya Pandit, who said that to save one community, you can sacrifice one family, and to save the state, you can sacrifice one city. To save the country, you can sacrifice one state. But to save yourself, you have to sacrifice the entire world.
Right.
So this is how important it is, like to save your soul, it is important to sacrifice the entire world. So this is how important it is to save your own soul.
Right.
And not to look in the outer world,
mm-hmm.
to reach the Bhagwan. And,
right.
So yeah, I just wanted to add this.
Thank you. I think we'll end. Okay. See you next week. Next week will be the last class, next Sunday, the 17th. And then there won't be any class on December 24 and December 31st. So we'll see you next week. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhina, Sarve Santu Niramaya, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kaschid Dukkha Bhava. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti, Hari Om.